I love this gospel story. Now, if I was preaching for you every week, you would come to know pretty quick that I say that almost every week. I love this gospel story because I just do love the gospel stories. And every time I read one, I see it, something new in it that I hadn't seen before. But before I get into really looking at this passage, I wanted to share a story that I heard on NPR this week. And I heard it just once, and I didn't go back and check everything out and get all the details straight on it. So I'm just going to tell you, retell this story as it has come through me, and it may or may not be real accurate. But you can check it out on NPR. You can go there and find out more. It was just such an intriguing story because it starts with a couple, a man and a woman, husband and wife, who are both scientists. And they moved from somewhere in God's country. I think it was a beautiful place. And they moved to Butte, Montana. And they really were not looking forward to being in Butte, Montana, because what they knew about Butte was that it had one of the biggest copper mines in the world. How many of you have been to the copper mine in Butte, Montana? Okay, you know what it looks like. It is this huge scar on the earth. I mean, it is so huge. I saw it years and years ago when it was still in operation. And it is so huge that those monstrous machines that move the soil look like Tonka trucks going down the side. That's how huge it is, just huge. They didn't want to be in Butte. You know, they didn't want to have to look at that scar on the earth. So they decided that the research that they were called to do, though, in Butte was important enough and interesting enough that they could somehow just not look. They just weren't going to look over there at the biggest copper mine in the world and its horror. And so that's what they did. That's what they did. And the time came when the copper mine was shut down. And I didn't know this about copper mines, but they have pumps in them that when it's in operation has to keep going to keep the water, because the water table is right there and the mine is huge. And so if you stop the pumps, the mine fills up with water. And so they have these pumps going, but when they close the mine down, they close the pumps down. So what happens? Of course, we have the water start leaching up through the earth and down through the earth, with all of that residue of minerals that are now doing their chemical stuff with the air and creating not a beautiful pool in the bottom that you might want to jump off the cliffs and take a nice nosedive into. No. A toxic waste pool of acid. So you imagine what that looked like? Imagine what they thought then about that mine. It would have been even harder to not look at it anymore because you just how horrible it was. And then a story is told that, you know, the Canadian snow geese migrate over Butte going south. And one night, this huge migration of Canadian snow geese, thousands of them, took a look at that pool at the bottom and at first glance thought, what it was a lovely resting spot. So they all settled down into the toxic waste waters of the copper mine. The next morning, there were thousands of carcasses everywhere. Now be the couple who's moved to Butte, Montana. What do they see there now? They certainly don't want to look at that. And so they avoid it as much as they can. One day, a scientist friend of theirs comes to them with a stick. And this stick has algae growing on it. And he says, look at this. What do you think this is? And they look at the stick, and I said, well, it's some kind of algae. We haven't seen this before. They're scientists. They know all about algae. They didn't know what this was. They said, where did you get it? At the copper mine pool. It was floating just beneath the water, and the algae was still growing on it. Nothing had grown in that pool forever. You know, but here they had this stick. So they started looking at the algae. And do you know what they discovered? Life-saving potential. The algae that was growing on that stick that survived the toxic waste of that pool had generated a kind of algae that could be used in the curing of cancer. Now they were interested in that pool. Now they went to that pool all of the time, and they began to see the medicinal qualities of that algae because it had survived and thrived in the toxic waste of that copper mine. So here they are. Now they're going there, and they're seeing this pool, right, with new eyes. One day when they're there, they look and they see this, I'm never going to get this word right, viscous, slimy, jellyfish-like stuff, black, you know, kind of floating on the water there. And they scoop some up and they take it back to their lab, and lo and behold, it's a kind of sponge organism that is cleaning the water. So they go to a friend of theirs, they say, what is this? And he looks and does some research, and he says, you know, this is only found in one other place that we know of. The rectum of Canadian snow geese. Darn it, isn't that an amazing story? Toxic pool of death. Life-giving source. Beautiful Canadian snow geese, horrible death, discovery of life. Our first glances mean nothing. Our first glances at this world, our first glances at each other, our first glances at our neighbors, our first glances of any situation that we find ourselves means nothing. Means nothing. Okay, now we'll go to this story. It begins with a table. Do you see this table, first glance? It's just a table, a small one. Small because we're told it belongs to Simon the Pharisee. And we know Pharisees, right? We've seen them before. They are small-minded, legalistic, out to get our friend Jesus, so his table's got to be really small, not room for very many people at all. But look again. The table is big enough to give a place to Jesus, who at first glance, for many, was a troublemaker, a renegade, a revolutionary, someone who doesn't even keep the Sabbath, who eats and carouses with sinners, who in his right mind has a table that's big enough for the likes of Jesus. Could it be that Simon the Pharisee is more open-minded than we thought at our first glance? Or is he just willing to risk his reputation to get an inside scoop on this troublesome Jesus? Or is it possible that he's wondering if there might be more to Jesus than what we have seen at first glance? So after we've taken another look, we see that the table at the center of this story is quite a bit bigger than we thought it was. And then we have to take that suddenly bigger table out and replace it with a bigger one yet, because someone new comes into the story, a tear-stained woman. She comes right in, sits right down, and baby lets her hair hang down. And at first, all that we can think, along with Simon Peter, is, horrors, what's that wild woman doing at my table? For that matter, what is any woman doing at my table? Simon looks at the woman. Simon looks at the woman and sees, at first glance, a sinner. I mean, just look at that wild hair. Look at those guilty, sorrowful tears. Look at her just crying all over him. Look at her touching him, a sinner at my table. What will the neighbors think? What will my Pharisee friends think? What will my boss think? What will God think? What is Jesus thinking? What is Jesus thinking? And Simon looks at Jesus, looking at the woman. Who is this man at my table? Is he a prophet? Is he who some have said he is, the Christ? Or have I brought God's wrath upon me? Horrors, two sinners at my table. Jesus looks at Simon, looking at the woman. He says, Simon, do you see this woman? Do you see this woman? So Simon looks at the woman looking at Jesus. At first glance, he had only seen a sinner, a prostitute probably, certainly a woman acting out of the bounds of proper behavior, a wanton woman throwing herself at his guest. But he looks again with eyes more open to the unexpected because Jesus has invited him to see new possibilities. A woman. A woman who has been forgiven much. A woman who risked everything to love even more. Could it be that what looked at first glance like tears of shame and sorrow were indeed tears of joy and gratitude for forgiveness extended and new life found? Could it be that what looked at first glance like perfumed guilt offering poured on Jesus' feet to woo him was indeed the sacred ritual of anointing the Messiah, sitting at his very table? Could it be that this woman, who at first glance was the epitome of a sinner, is actually the epitome of radical love and hospitality that flows from a place of new creation? Love and hospitality that everyone at first glance should have expected from him. Why had he not seen that at first glance? Simon looks at himself, looking at Jesus, and lowers his head, wondering if there is forgiveness for someone as short-sighted as himself, if the table is big enough for him. The woman looks at Jesus, looking at Simon. She lowers her head and kisses her feet. She has been seen. She is no longer named she who has been forgiven much. At this table, she is declared she who has loved more. And such a transformation is worth crying over. And her tears rain down upon the one who has so named her. So now the stage is set. How will this play proceed? The table is still right here at the center. And if it's Jesus' table, it is a very, 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 very big table. And there is room for he who has been forgiven little and loved even less. And there is room for she who has been forgiven much and loved even more. And there is room for the likes of you. And there is room for the likes of me, who cannot keep this microphone on her ear. There is room for those we turn away from at first glance. There is room for those we judge at first glance. There is room for those we dislike and dishonor and disrespect at first glance. There is room for those we are afraid of. There is room for those we are ashamed of. There are room for those who we don't understand at all. There is room for those we don't even give a first glance. Time and time again, Jesus looks around the table, and his gaze moves out, 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 beyond this table, into the community, into the world, and he asks us, do you see them? Do you see them? Now there's a question. And he seems to see so much more than we see. He sees love, not sins. His eyes are full of compassion. His eyes are wide open with amazing grace. His eyes are bright with transforming love. He sees beyond first glances to possibilities of new creation. What do we see? That's the question. That's the gospel question. And what do we do with what we see or what we don't see? I just want to tell you about something that happened in my very first church that I served way back in 1980. I was young and stupid, ignorant. I thought I knew a whole lot. And I was in charge of this little church, and I was going to make things work. But one of the problems that we had was we had a shed out in the back of the church, and some homeless guy was sleeping in it all the time. And he would go in there, and he would take the cans, lids off of the trash cans. He'd put the trash on the outside, and then he'd take the lids that were plastic, and he'd put them in the shed, so he had a place to sleep, you know. And he didn't always clean things up well, and I was getting really frustrated with that. You know, I mean, every morning I'd come and I'd see a mess. Just, that's what I'd see, another mess. So one night when I was taking my drive around the church before I went to bed, I always came by just to check to see that everything was okay, because heaven knows that if I didn't do that, the church would fall down or something, I guess. But I did it every night. And as I came around to the shed, I could tell he was in there. I could tell because there was some sounds in there. And so I took my car and I put it right up to the door of the shed. And I turned the lights on full beam. And then I got out of the car and I yelled, "Get out of that shed! I am tired of the mess you keep making. Come out of that shed!" And I'm telling you, that door flew open. And a girl about 12, A girl, a little girl of about 12, came out of the shed and ran like hell was at her heels. And she ran so fast, and it was so amazing to me. It took me a minute. I got back in the car because I wanted to go get her, of course. I wanted to go get her and take her home and take care of her. I wanted her to be my child that would be fed and cared for and loved like she deserved, instead of living in the shed of a church on top of some garbage cans with the pastor screaming at her to get out of there because she's making a mess. But I never found her. And I have never forgotten her. And my life was changed by her. Because I realized that I had come to the conclusion at first glance of what was going on. And it was my job to get it all organized and cleaned up and right like it should be. God, forgive me.